Foreign Madam and the White Yogi, a verse novel in progress by Chris Mooney Singh, episode 33. In this installment, the bus pilgrimage has taken Yogi and his friend Amrik Singh to their first stop in the foothills of the Himalayas beside the mighty Yamuna River. Ponta Sahib is the location of an historical Sikh temple known as a Gurdwara, established by Guru Gobind Singh, the 10th master of the Sikh philosophy, in 1685. Here at Ponta Sahib, meaning foothold, Yogi hears more about the history and culture of Sikhism. And interestingly, it bears relation to elements that he has found in the Mahabharata, the great Indian epic. At Ponta Sahib, the bus wove. Tight streets, blaring horns, vans, cars, rickshaws, then through the Gate of Peace. White edifice, carved, ice palace, the dome, a dairy whip cone, pink and gold. Loudspeakers, kirtan. The word lives inside, outside the marble house of song. It's a beautiful temple, Yogi said to Amrik as they went in. Gurdwara, we say. Guru Dwara, meaning doorway to the Guru. Foot traffic, pilgrims, river of turbans, beside fast Yamuna, foothill Himalayas, the river roaring upstream, downstream. But below the Gurdwara, just a trickle of silence. How can that be? Yogi asked. Amrik told how the 16-year-old Gobind, scholar of Persian, Arabic and Sanskrit and great devotional poet in Brij Bhasha dialect, sponsored 52 others from Benares. Sanskrit scholars, they translated classics, the Bhagavatam, Shiv Puran, the Mahabharata, into common parlance. Guru Gobind staged the first Kavi Darbar, a poetry gathering under the full moon. He listened to each until they shook their poet heads and stopped. The Yamuna was drowning out their words, Amrik added. The Guru listened to their grievance. The river below the Gurdwara has been ever silent since that day, and no scientist can explain just why. Since Chandigarh, Yogi had been left alone. Now Amrik was the diligent tour guide, strolling the marble precinct of Ponta Sahib. The air was clean with sweeping clouds of birds. Striped squirrels ran up trunks of pines. There was some shift in the scene. He spoke with purpose, as if he had an agenda to introduce this foreigner to the struggles of his people. When Guru Sahib reached here on his horse, it halted, and so he stepped down solidly, planting his foot. Ponta means firm landing, or foothold. Oh, it's very kind you sharing this, said Yogi. Amrik curtly nodded, and then went on. Medini Prakash, the Raja of Samur, invited him to stay. This would lead to wars with other vassal Rajas of Himachal, jealous of the Guru's entourage and seeking favours from the ruling Mughal. You see, our fifth Guru and our ninth were martyred by those tyrants. Guru Arjan was roasted on a big chapati hot plate and died singing one of his sweetest shabads. My Guru is with me, ever close at hand. Tegh Bahadur was beheaded in Old Delhi while speaking up for 500 Brahmins told to choose either death or Islam. These men of peace were fathers to Gobind, who sat down here and wrote his massive book as big as our own Sri Guru Granth Sahib, our holy book. By this time, they had found the small museum. Paintings portrayed the Guru as a Raja with a plumed turban and a fine silk dress coat. Amrik, why did he not wear holy clothes? Surely a politician brings on his own storms. Good point, Yogi. It is like this. You see, we Sikhs aren't beggar monks. We have been told to live and work and give. Good deeds are all. I know you have been reading Mahabharata. It's the same. The Pandavas were princes who did their karma following the Dharma. We are those royal Kshatriyas, warriors who kept their locks and beards as a mark of rank. Our Guru opened that door to all the castes and made us in the image of great kings. After seeing the Guru's worn-out kalams, two nibbed reeds for writing poetry inside a mounted cabinet, they came upon another painting in the jungle. A tiger stealthily leaping from behind to grip the Guru's neck. He turns. The tiger's head is cleaved with the slash of the Guru's sword. Shergarh Gurdwara is the place that happened. The next painting's English caption read, Bangani, the Battle, 1686. The Hill Raja's 30,000 troops, plus mercenaries from Afghanistan, fought against 4,000 well-drilled Sikhs. Amrit quoted lines from Guru Gobind about the conflict, translating into English. I lined up my aim at one Khan, discharging an arrow. It pierced him as if a cobra had suddenly stung him. And each Guru arrow held half an ounce of gold for the burial. When did all this happen? Yogi asked. Just 14 kilometers from here, said Amrik. Finally, Amrik brought him to the weapons, antique steel behind prophylactic glass. Yogi reacted. But how can these be here in a holy place, all these blades of death? Amrik laughed. Without the sword, we wouldn't have survived. When a tyrant comes, will you lay down or stand your ground and fight? But what about Gandhi's non-resistance? He'd seen the movie, read the autobiography. Satyagraha was guilt strategy. It worked too well because it shamed the noblest sentiments of the British. But most people forget 80% of those exiled, jailed or martyred during independence were Punjabis. As Yogi listened, his flimsy pacifism seemed hard to justify to history. Amrik added, you know, Guruji then wrote to Aurangzeb, after the tyrant let his general brick alive the sons of the Guru, aged 7 and 9. When every approach has been tried, yet fails, then the sword must speak for righteousness. I told this tale the day you came to my shop. By now, Amrik Singh was speaking loudly of Shastra Vidya, the artful science of weapons. This was the ancient Indian fighting form practiced by rishis, kings, and commoners. We keep it alive, and we call it Gatka. Yogi scanned the wall as Amrik listed. This is Khanda, old straight sword of India. This is Talwar, import Persian scimitar. This is Arman, nine-layered composite bow. This is Tir, arrow tipped with iron head. This is Barcha, spear-held, javelin-hurled. This is Gurj, ball and chain, skull-crusher. This is Ara, bendable long snake strip sword. This is Katar, hand-thrust, chainmail piercer. This is Banduk, rustic, matchlock rifle. This is Chakra, sharp-edge, whirling disc. This is Chakri, rotary of chains and balls. These are dals, shields, steel made or of leather. This is Baknak, iron leopard's claws for hands. This is Lati, staff of head crack ironwood. This is Trishul, trident spikes for the turban. This is Kripan, last dagger of defense. At Dastar Astan, boys were winding turbans of every kind of colour and social style. It was a competition to see how fast and formed they wound around a long tradition dating from Guru Gobind. Dastara means turban, Amrik said, a Persian term. The troops would have to tie it fast without a mirror before they rushed to battle. I don't mean to be rude, but is it important? I mean, Why not go breezy and bareheaded? Long-haired Yogi had to justify. Amrik was glad, but did not tell that long flowing kesh was evidence of bedraggled discipline, whereas kesh tied neatly in a bun was a modest way to hide one's rishi knot. These are cultural matters that foreigners couldn't know, but his audience was captive. First, the guru told us to. For us, that is enough. But there's other reasons. We can wind the folds recalling everyday 10 Sikh masters. It is role modeling. And the dastar is the crown of royalty, authority and power. Is it not regal? Exchanging turbans is a solemn bond from state to state, family head to head. Daily it restrains our uncut hairs, most crucial in a knotty spot of battle, and before long beards, our extra turban height, the enemy becomes a flock of lambs. It doubles as a towel, a rope, a sheet, and keeps away mosquitoes and is our dust bandana while ploughing in the fields. There are so many applications of the dastar as long as the Silk Road goes on. But finally, it is our sign of being Sings, our Shan. That also calls responsibility to stand up for the crushed against the tyrant. A true Sikh must rise tall inside a crowd. Ranjit Nagara, the war drum, being beaten, called them to an outside gathering. "Oh, we're lucky," Amrik said. "The old Nihangs are going to perform some Gutka for the people." "Who are Nihangs?" Yogi had to ask. "Oh, they were once the crack troops of the Guru, following the ideal of a soldier saint. Bands of them still roam the countryside, though many think they are scandalous anachronisms, medieval, indulgent, riding their horses and bartering old glory." They came in dark blue, high-wound, heavy dastars, and matching calf-length chola cotton tunics tied with orange sashes. Slung with weapons, they whirled in slashing sweeps with no fear or hesitation, clashing swords on shields in rapid fire blows, then peeled away like a row of leaping lords ready to switch to another weapon, swirling a chakri or flashing talwars with both flexible wrists, crashing their hand-swung gurij, the ball and chain, and doing bendable feats with javelins, forcing the tip against the throat's soft hollow, then smashing bricks with swords across the stomach. One blindfolded carved up watermelons, each between a turbaned head on the ground, and then a final coconut on a forehead was cleaved in half and offered to the crowd. Yogi thought, the Mahabharata was fought with like skill. These martial arts endure as storms of Shakti, Indian Shaolin. At least Nihangs have kept the old sword sharp. They heard the hunting horn blast from the bus. Time to board. All took their elephant time and newcomers climbed. Three men in blue dastars and white pyjamas, looking priest-like, also entered. "Who are they?" inquired Yogi in a whisper. "Ah, Adhadi Jatta. They sing ballads, vars of the Guru's lives and our historic struggles. They must be coming with us to Hemkund Sahib. Maybe they will sing along the way. It's how they earn their roti, from donations offered at religious gatherings." Duty done, Amrik pressed his face against the pane and did an Indian trick, snoozing in some weird bus yoga posture. Now they wound back through the skinny streets until they found the highway signpost turn. Along the roadside, women in flimsy saris were crushing rockfall with their big sledgehammers and carting it off on basket-balanced heads, an unsung feat, extraordinary endurance. One struggled to carry her pregnancy as well. Millions of women had no spare change or time to take a luxury tour to the Himalayas. As the pneumatic coach sped on its tires, negotiating hills and valley bends, Amrik had not observed the car trailing like a snake since Chandigarh. You've been listening to Foreign Madam and the White Yogi, a verse novel in progress by Chris Mooney Singh. If you'd like to find out more about my work, go to my website at chrismooneysingh.com or follow the link in the program notes. Until next week, see you then.